And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. And I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. In this particular studio for the very last time. We'll be moving on to a new studio in the future. But that's the way it is. Things change. Anyway, I request that you have a pencil and paper handy because it's going to be crucial that you take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses, web pages, dates, times, locations, who did it, and who's getting away with it, because you'll want to act on a lot of this information later. Anyway, by the way, today is September 17th, 2015. Let's start off with our final announcement for the Southeast U.S. Genetically Engineered Trees Action Camp is going to be taking place next week, September 24th through the 27th in North Carolina. And you better get on that webpage, globaljusticeecology.org/apply-action-camp. That is globaljusticeecology.org/apply-action-camp. That's how you're going to find out where and when this camp is, or where this camp is. Participation is free and food and board will be provided, but space is limited and the application deadline might already be passed. I have no way of knowing. Anyway, they're going to have an action camp. You'll be given an overview of the current state of genetically engineered trees. You'll get trained in organizing, direct action, blockades, your rights as protesters, how to use media and art in protests, as well as other critical topics. You will be trained for immediate and direct use of your skills and knowledge gained at the action camp in protests and organizing against genetically engineered trees. And once again, the Southeast U.S. Genetically Engineered Trees Action Camp, September 24th through the 27th in North Carolina. The place to apply, globaljusticeecology.org/apply-action-camp. And here in Santa Cruz, coming up on Thursday, October 1st, the film Wrenched will be aired at the Del Mar Theater at 7 p.m., how Edward Abbey lit the flame of environmental activists and gave the movement its soul. This screening will be a fundraiser for the Ventana Wilderness Alliance. Tickets are $20 in advance at vwawrenched.papertickets.com. That's VWAWR. ENCHED.brownpapertickets.com. But if you wait and see if there's any room, it'll be $25 at the door. If you want to know more about the movie, go to wrenched-themovie.com. This event is hosted by the Ventana Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit dedicated to the conservation of public lands in the Big Sur backcountry. And if you haven't been in Ventana Wilderness, you should get down there. I don't think any of it's burned this year, knock on wood. So, anyway, the program will celebrate the legacy of Edward Abbey and the Monkey Wrench Gang book, and will feature a live introduction by Ed's sister, local activist and educator Nancy Abbey, a fine, fine woman. I have known her for many, many years, and unfortunately, she's the one who told me that Ed was dead. You know, the kind of thing only family can tell you. Anyway, that date is Thursday, October 1st. Where? The Del Mar Theater, 7 p.m. Tickets $20 in advance at vwawrenched.brownpapertickets.com or $25 at the door. And if you've got more, they'll take it. Here's a little news from Intercontinental Cry. Voting is now open for the first annual People Land Truth Awards. Intercontinental Cry is putting on these awards, and the nominations will be open until October 1st, so you still have a couple of weeks. The public is encouraged to offer some thanks of their own by voting for their favorite articles for the People Land Truth Awards. And how do you take part in the People Land Truth Awards? Well, go to their webpage, and which is intercontinentalcry.org, and take a look at all the articles that they have posted there, and then go to intercontinentalcry.org/PLTAWARDS. That's PLT Awards at the intercontinentalcry.org website. And this is going to be an annual awards program. This is their first year, so we'll see how that comes out. And public comment is being sought for review of newly protected tar plant. The Livermore tar plant is known to exist only at a few locations in Alameda County, and it has been designated a candidate species under the California Endangered Species Act. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is requesting comments from the public for its review of the status of the Livermore tar plant. Like the Santa Cruz tar plant, the Livermore tar plant is in the sunflower family and has yellow flower heads that bloom in summer and early fall. Livermore tar plant also has sticky glands that give the plants a strong odor. Only four populations of the Livermore tar plant are known to exist, all in the eastern portion of Livermore Valley within the city of Livermore and the unincorporated lands of Alameda County. Livermore tar plant is found in alkaline meadows where salts form whitish or grayish crusts on the soil and few other plants can grow. The California Fish and Game Commission received a petition to list the Livermore tar plant under the CESA in August of 2014. At a publicly noticed meeting on April 9th, the commission considered the petition. A petition evaluation report was prepared by CDFW and comments were received by the public. The commission concluded the petition provided sufficient scientific information to indicate listing Livermore tar plant under CESA may be warranted, and therefore designated Livermore tar plant as a candidate species for listing. The petition to list the Livermore tar plant and CDFW's petition evaluation report can be found at the commission website, www.fgc.ca.gov/regulations/2014, and I think you can find it from there. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is in the process of preparing a review of the Livermore tar plant status as required. CDFW invites anyone interested to submit data and comments be noted later than December 31st. Of this year. You can send your comments to nativeplants@wildlife.ca.gov. That's nativeplants@wildlife.ca.gov. And after the status review is complete, it will be posted at CDFW's website. There will be another public meeting, and if the commission finds that it's appropriate, then they will list the Livermore tar plant as threatened or endangered. Meanwhile, the provisions of the California Endangered Species Act apply to the Livermore tar plant while it is a candidate species. This prohibits the import, export, take possession, purchase, or sale of the Livermore tar plant, except in limited circumstances, such as through a permit issued by CDFW under the authority of the Fish and Game Code. But don't count on it. If you need more information on CESA permitting for plants, go to the website, www.wildlife.ca.gov/conservation/plants/permits. And a pitiful fine has been issued for a wolf killer. It's one of the sickest stories I've heard in a long time. This is Kieran Suckling of the Center for Biological Diversity writing. Last fall in eastern Washington, a man spotted a wolf, chased him several miles in a truck, and then shot the wolf twice, leaving it to suffer until government agents could end the wolf's misery. We've waited nearly a year to hear the punishment for Jonathan Rasmussen. As wolves are protected under Washington's Endangered Species Act, and the local prosecutor has just announced his decision, Mr. Rasmussen was fined $100. that's certainly going to act as a sufficient deterrent, I guess, unless he happens to have a lot of $100 bills lying around. The wolf was the first in Whitman County, Washington, in over a century, and there was no sign that the wolf was chasing any livestock. His death was cruel and pointless, but sadly, senseless killings like this happen far too often. The shooter who killed Echo, the first wolf to travel to the Grand Canyon in 70 years, claimed he mistook that wolf for a coyote and was never charged with any crime at all. We've seen other wolves caught in foot traps before they're shot or paraded through town on the top of cars once they've been killed. It's the same kind of bloodlust that drove wolves to the brink of extinction 100 years ago, and it has to stop. I know wolf lovers are infuriated by what's happening. We need your help to turn this anger into action. A donation to the Predator Defense Fund will go right to our intensive work to save wolves and their families from Jonathan Rasmussen's of the world. The Center for Biological Diversity is fighting for wolves everywhere, and we've won again and again. The most important tool in protecting them is the Federal Endangered Species Act, and this case shows exactly why local law enforcement can't be trusted with the wolves' fate. A $100 fine for killing a wolf is a joke, but saving wolves is serious. Let the killers know that you stand with the wolves. Give generously to the Predator Defense Fund. With help of members like you, our lawyers and scientists are pursuing the most aggressive pro-wolf agenda in the country, while other groups may be resigning themselves to losing the wolf wars. We'll never stop fighting for these animals. It may be too late for the wolf in Washington's Palouse, but it's not too late to save the next one for the wolves. Kieran Suckling, director of the Center for Biological Diversity, and their webpage is www.biologicaldiversity.org. And over in Africa, Sudanese poachers killing elephants amid Central African chaos. In this story by Louis Charbonneau, with editing by Phil Berlewitz, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Sudanese poachers have been taking advantage of the chaos in conflict-torn Central African Republic and are killing elephants for their ivory and other wild animals, an expert panel that monitors UN sanctions said in a confidential report seen by Reuters. Central African Republic descended into chaos in March of 2013 when predominantly Muslim Salika rebels seized power, triggering reprisals by anti-Balaka Christian militias who drove tens of thousands of Muslims from the south in a de facto partition of the landlocked country. Although rival armed groups agreed to a peace accord last May, the conflict has continued at a lower intensity and the transitional government has been unable to assert its authority over the Central African Republic's vast mineral-rich territory. One of the main problems is trafficking in blood diamonds. In May, two groups of some 200 poachers from Sudan were active in the Eastern Central African Republic, killing elephants and other wild animals, according to the report. They usually establish a base camp from where they split into smaller groups of 20 to 30 poachers, the panel said. The drastic decrease in the pachyderm population, approximately 400 savanna elephants remain in Eastern Central African Republic, is obliging poachers to remain longer in the Central African Republic than before, including during the rainy season, it added. The panel said Sudanese poachers are experienced, well-armed with AK-47 assault rifles, and feared. There were also instances in which the poachers have attacked members of the Lord's Resistance Army, a rebel group that rose up against the Ugandan government in the 1980s and is still active and hiding out in Central African Republic. The expert said the poachers assumed that the Lord's Resistance Army always transports elephant tusks, gold, and other valuables. And I have heard reports about them, a guy carrying an elephant tusk for hundreds of miles through the African hinterland. They don't use roads. Even though poachers are reported to have robbed and regularly harassed civilians, no killings or acts of sexual violence have been reported, the report said, adding that the poachers likely wanted to avoid drawing attention of an African Union military force seeking to neutralize the feared Lord's Resistance Army. Sudan's UN mission did not respond immediately to a request for comment. The expert says the Lord's Resistance Army remains one of the main threats to peace and security in the east and southeast of the Central African Republic, and particularly in the provinces bordering Sudan, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Lord's Resistance Army operations are still primarily focused on generating revenue from the exploitation and trade of natural resources, specifically ivory and gold, the UN report said. And here's some more biological diversity news. 5,000 plus acres have been protected for a rare California wildflower. It was a big day for the California flower. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service protected 5,755 acres of critical habitat for the yellow Vandenberg monkey flower, which is known to exist in just 9 locations in the world, mostly open spaces on sandy soils between shrubs in Santa Barbara County. The biggest threat to the monkey flower is competition from invasive plants, but it's also threatened by military activities, residential and commercial development, fire, and climate change. Much of its habitat, maritime chaparral vegetation, has already been lost to development. The newly protected land is mostly public in or near Burton Mesa Ecological Reserve, La Purisima Mission State Historic Park, and Vandenberg Air Force Base. Saving rare plants has long been an integral part of the Center for Biological Diversity's work. We won an Endangered Species Act protection for this rare monkey flower in August of 2014 as part of our historic agreement in 2011 to speed protection decisions for 757 animals and plants around the country. So far under that agreement, 143 species have been protected and another 10 have been proposed for protection. And rules would keep whales and dolphins from dying in fishing gear. A new proposal from the National Marine Fisheries Service will prohibit seafood imports that don't meet U.S. standards for protecting whales, dolphins, and other marine mammals. Scientists estimate that each year more than 650,000 marine mammals are caught or killed in fishing gear. Typically, the animals are unintentionally snared and either drown or are tossed overboard to die from their injuries. The plan would be an important step towards limiting the number of marine mammals that die senseless deaths. The Marine Mammal Protection Act of 1972 has prohibited the United States from importing seafood unless it meets U.S. standards for protecting whales and dolphins, but the ban has been largely ignored. So the Center and its allies filed suit in 2014, and the new regulations were proposed as part of a settlement. The new regulations will force countries to meet the U.S. conservation standards if they want to access this market, saving thousands of whales and dolphins from dying on hooks and in fishing nets around the world, said Sarah Uleman, director of the Center for Biological Diversity's International Program. And the Animas River spill, a legacy of industry's abandoned mines. The millions of gallons of acidic mining wastewater that began spewing into Colorado's Animas River a month ago are a testament to the ugly legacy left behind by the mining industry in much of the West. There's certainly culpability with the Environmental Protection Agency, which caused the spill on the Animas during cleanup operations. But there's an underlying issue that shouldn't be ignored. The U.S. Government Accountability Office estimates there are 161,000 abandoned mines in the 12 western states and Alaska, including 23,000 in Colorado and some 400 in the Animas River watershed itself. All of them were left behind by the mining industry, and the rest of us are now footing the bill. The Center's Taylor McKinnon was a panelist on HuffPost Live about the Animas spill and what it tells us about the prospect for similar disasters if we don't act to clean all of that up. The other thing I might add is under the Mining Act of 1872, I believe it was, people who file mining claims and open mines on public land have to pay absolutely zero royalties. And so, therefore, there is no money to clean any of this up outside of the Superfund. And the Earth has 3 trillion trees, but they're falling at an alarming rate. And this story by Will Dunham, editing by Bill Trott of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Earth is home to just over 3 trillion trees, from the redwoods of California, the olive trees of Tunisia, the cherry trees of Japan, the eucalyptus of Australia, and so many more, but they are being lost at an alarming rate because of human activities. Those are the findings of researchers who unveiled a most comprehensive assessment of global tree populations ever conducted, using data including satellite imagery and ground-based tree density estimates from more than 400,000 locations worldwide. The estimate of 3.04 trillion trees, or an estimated 422 trees for every person alive today, is about 8 times higher than a previous estimate of 400 billion trees that was based on satellite imagery, but with less data from the ground. The new findings leave abundant reasons for concern, with people at the root of the problem. The number of trees has fallen by about 46% since the start of human civilization, and each year there is a gross loss of 15 billion trees and a net loss of 10 billion, said Yale University ecologist Thomas Crother, who led the study published in the journal Nature. There are currently fewer trees than at any point since the start of human civilization, and this number is still falling at an alarming rate, he said. If anything, the scale of these numbers just highlights the need to step up our efforts here if we are going to begin to repair some of the effects on a global scale. Crowther said a wide range of human activities deplete forested land. Conversion of land for agriculture historically has had the biggest impact on forests, but industrial and urban development have also had huge effects, Crowther said. As the human global population grows, the net loss of trees worldwide may also increase, Yale researcher Henry Glick said. Trees are some of the most prominent and important organisms on the planet, Crowther added. Trees provide a wide range of important ecosystem services for humans. They store water and nutrients, stabilize the soil, provide habitats for other plants and animals, and offset the impacts of climate change by absorbing carbon dioxide, and they also generate oxygen that we need to breathe. The study found that while the highest tree densities were in the subarctic regions of Russia, Scandinavia, and North America, the largest forested areas were in the tropics, home to about 43% of the global tree total. And the GOP's stunning new attack on America's national forests. There are two bills winding their way through Congress that could have dire implications for local communities and wildlife alike. In this story by Raynard Loki of Alternet, also found on Salon.com and the Earth First Newswires. Two Republican bills currently making their way through Congress should anger any American who cares about the national forests. Introduced this past summer, both bills are pro-industry and anti-environment and seek to eliminate the public participation in federal decisions about forest management that could negatively impact local communities, ecological health, and wildlife. H.R. 2647, the Resilient Federal Forest Act of 2015, was introduced by Representative Bruce Westerman. It passed the House and is now under consideration in the Senate. The other, Senate Bill 1691, the National Forest Ecosystem Improvement Act of 2015, was introduced by Senator John Barrasso. Hearings were held in the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, which is chaired by Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who has consistently supported corporate interests over the environment. Both bills would suspend or weaken several federal environmental laws, clear the way for the timber industry to dramatically increase commercial logging across U.S. national forests. Introduced on June 4th, H.R. 2647 is a pro-industry bill that seeks to streamline the process by which commercial logging projects are managed by the federal government. One of the ways it wants to accomplish this is by limiting public debate on timber projects, effectively excluding the American public from their legal right to generate and review agency actions regarding forest management. H.R. 2647 appears to favor the rubber stamping of industrial logging projects in national forests by establishing several worrisome environmental review requirement exclusions from such projects. These exclusions would effectively remove critical opportunities for American voters to participate in governmental decisions regarding how forests are managed by federal executive departments such as the Department of Agriculture and the Interior Department. Specifically, H.R. 2647 would create new categorical exclusions from review under National Environmental Policy Act of 1969. introduced provisions to limit opportunities for judicial review by creating attorney's fee recovery provisions and binding requirements that would effectively impede access to the courts, lower the membership of resource advisory committees that advise the Forest Service on land use decisions from 15 to 6, which would significantly reduce the diversity of stakeholders on land use decisions. Outdoor Alliance, a nonprofit coalition of seven member-based organizations that represents interests of millions of Americans in all 50 states who enjoy the nation's outdoors, says the bill elevates a single interest timber over the diverse activities that take place on national forests, including recreation. And in a letter sent last month to House Speaker John Boehner and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Adam Kramer, Executive Director of Outdoor Alliance, which includes the Access Fund, American Canoe Association, American Whitewater, International Mountain Biking, Winter Wildlands Alliance, the Mountaineers, and the American Alpine Clubs, sharply criticized the bill. This measure shortcuts critical public participation requirements for management decisions on national forests and BLM lands that have the potential for severe negative impacts on outdoor recreation economy, and conservation values. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And if you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this show, please tune in tomorrow afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 at 3 p.m. That's 3 p.m. Friday for a rebroadcast. And if you live in Moscow, Idaho, there is a new time for the rebroadcast of the Earth First Update. It is 1:15 in the afternoon on Wednesdays, and that is after Democracy Now! You can tune in to Radio Free Moscow at 90.3 KRFP. And once again, that new program time for the Earth First Update is 1:15 p.m. on Wednesdays. You can also go to radioforall.net, and there you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. That is radio4all.net. And those folks do a great job, and they deserve your support, too. So click on the banner and support radio4all.net. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. Unfortunately, this is the last broadcast from our current studio that we've been in for over 12 years, and we are looking for a new one. So if you can help us out, send an email to frsc@freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.